Raymond Manyathela on 702.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
DStv Channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
Six minutes after 9 o'clock. Dumelang, welcome to the Clement Manyathela Show on this Thursday, the 28th of March, as we get ready for the long Easter weekend. Thank you for being with us here on 702. I hope you're well this morning. I hope you managed to go to get up and go to gym, if that's what you do on a Thursday morning. Or maybe walk your dog. Is that what you do in the morning? Or maybe go for a run, if that's what you're into. I did a 8 kilometer speed run this morning. Speed runs are so difficult, and I've just been yawning this whole morning, and my body is tired. I was doing 5 minutes per kilometer for 8 kilometers. That's torture. Like, your body just is finished. And I realized this morning as I was doing this speed run that training for comrades is difficult, and I'm beginning to feel it now. I mean, in the beginning, it was exciting. You are inspired. You're thinking, I'm ready to do this. And then your coach keeps intensifying the training program. And then you start thinking, should I really be doing it? I mean, I found myself for the first time this morning questioning whether or not I should actually be doing comrades this year. Because we've had such a very hectic training schedule this entire week. So if you've done comrades before and you used to train, give us some encouragement. Some of us who are doing it for the first time this year. Does it really get this tough during the training where you're thinking maybe it's time to give up? Send some words of encouragement, please, and some tips. But I've realized this week that this has been my hardest training so far. In fact, you know, every time I push myself, and I wonder if you do the same thing, every time I push myself too hard at the gym or on the road, I always feel the need to reward myself. Do you ever feel like that? Like on Tuesday, I had a tough day at the gym with my coach, and afterwards I decided to have dessert on 2 consecutive nights. I shouldn't be doing that, but I just felt like my body was taken through difficulty and I needed to reward it. Even though that means you are undoing what you did. Yesterday, I decided to get a pie, a well after gym, a steak and kidney, after having had it for so long. And it was a way of rewarding myself. Do you do that sometimes, eating what you know you shouldn't be eating, but you're doing it to reward yourself? After a busy day at work, or after a workshop, after a difficult run or a tough day at the gym. And what's your favorite reward? Some people get wings. You know, some people get lots of ice cream or KFC. How do you reward yourself after a workout that was hectic or a busy day? 011-883-0702. That's the number to dial. The WhatsApp line is 072-702-1702. In a moment, I'm going to tell you about a court ruling in the Pretoria High Court, which found that the Minister of Transport and the Road Accident Fund overreached their powers by issuing a directive that excludes illegal foreigners involved in accidents from accessing the Road Accident Fund's benefits. And I wonder what your thoughts are, right? Should illegal foreign nationals be entitled to claim from the Road Accident Fund? We're going to talk about that in a moment. Also, who are the Gaba brothers? And why would they want AKA dead? The Durban Magistrates Court heard yesterday that the fourth suspect in the murder case of AKA and Tibello Motswane. We heard from court that Muziwethemba Gwabeni, who is the fourth suspect in this murder case, was allegedly paid about 800,000 rand by a prominent businessman, Sydney Mfundo Gaba, the day after the murder. Apparently, this person comes from a notorious family with a taxi business empire. They are often described as the taxi dons of Durban. Does anybody know about the family, their links, their influence? If the NPA proves their case, why would they want AKA dead? Let's talk about that on the 702 open lines.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
011-883-0702. That is the number to dial. The WhatsApp line is 072-702-1702. So the High Court in Pretoria has found that the Minister of Transport and the Road Accident Fund overreached their powers by issuing a directive that excludes illegal foreigners involved in accidents from accessing RAF's benefits. I see the Business Day this morning is reporting that a full bench of the court argued that the ministry and the Road Accident Fund can unilaterally interfere with the act, the RAF Act, that is, outside the parameters of the legislature. So the argument here is issuing a directive that goes against the act goes beyond their powers. So that directive that was issued was the requirement for foreign nationals claiming from the Road Accident Fund to prove that they were in the country legally when accidents happened and provide copies of their passports with entry stamps. So basically, the Road Accident Fund wants to exclude illegal foreign nationals from accessing the fund's benefits. What is wrong with that? I don't see anything wrong with requiring that people prove that they were here legally at the time of the accident. Or how do you see it? I mean, I get what the court has ruled on. It's not on whether or not illegal foreigners must benefit from the Road Accident Fund. The court merely ruled on the legality of the directives by the RAF and the Minister of Transport, which I understand. Right? If they want to change the act, that must be done through Parliament. You don't just issue directives that contradict legislation, no matter how well-intentioned they are. And I know that there's actually proposed changes brought forward by the Road Accident Fund in the draft RAF amendment bill that was published in September for public comment. So that bill proposes the banning of compensation for any person who is not a South African citizen or a permanent resident. And it also proposes that all future medical claims must be pre-authorized by the RAF, otherwise they will not be paid. So do you think and do you find anything wrong with the approach by the Road Accident Fund when it comes to illegal foreign nationals claiming from the Road Accident Fund? So the RAF Act is very clear on this. In fact, because the Road Accident Fund has an obligation in terms of the RAF Act. So let's maybe even look at the RAF Act. So the RAF Act indicates that the RAF Act, you have to compensate any person for any loss or damage which the third party has suffered as a result of any bodily injury to himself or herself or the death of any bodily injury to any other person caused by or arising from the driving of a motor vehicle by any person at any place within the Republic of South Africa. That's just the act that I was reading here. That's the RAF Act. That's what it says. Right? But if we pay claims by illegal foreign nationals, are we not aiding and abetting illegal foreigners to contravene the Immigration Act or the Refugees Act? In fact, let's look at the act. Section 42, I'm looking at Section 42.1 of the Immigration Act, prohibits anyone from aiding and abetting, assisting or enabling, or in any manner helping an illegal foreigner by letting or selling, or in any manner making available immovable property to him or her. So if RAF pays monies to illegal immigrants who claim from this fund, isn't that contravening the act? And the court found this argument to be lacking in substance. They said the discharge of RAF's obligations as per the act can be interpreted as aiding and abetting illegal foreigners. I'm interested in your thoughts. My concern here is the Road Accident Fund is a social benefit scheme that is already under strain. It doesn't have enough money to cover its obligations towards South Africans. I honestly think it should be a scheme as it was designed initially for the benefit of South African citizens, for the benefit of permanent residents and those who are lawfully in the country. What are your thoughts? 011-883-0702. WhatsApp.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
Your WhatsApp's on 072-702-1702. Let's start with Dube first, who's calling us from Pretoria. Dube, hello. Hey, Dube.
Hello.
Oh, Dube is not ready for us. We'll come back to Dube in a moment. Let's go to the WhatsApps.
Good morning, Clem de la Clem, to your team and to 702 listeners. So, Clement, I'm curious, right? So, who is that lady that AKA was with and she jumped out of the balcony from the hotel? Who is that young lady who jumped out of the balcony? Did she jump out or was she pushed out? And I understand that she comes from a very wealthy family. So I'm really curious. Can you please tell us if you know who is that young lady who jumped out of the balcony and she was with AKA on that day? And then coming to that KZN business guy, who is that guy? Is there a link between that business guy and that young lady who jumped out on that balcony? Yeah, cool. Please let us know. Thank you. Bye.
I feel you, Tlemi. I really feel you. You know, running is not a child's play. I mean, there are times when I'm doing a 42 at 35, 38, I ask myself, what was I thinking about, let alone I've got one comrades, bucket list ticked. I mean, at 60 mark, 70, I was like, no, I'm going back. Good luck, man. Hang in there. You're almost there. Zweli, thanks.
Oh, Zweli, it's tough, brother. I hope I won't turn back when I get to 70. I was at a dinner recently and I was sitting on a table with someone who had done 25 comrades. Prime Media had hosted dinner with CEOs and I was sitting on the table with this guy and he told me his advice to me was comrades is a 21-kilometer run. He says the minute you pass 60, after 60 kilometers, that's when your race really starts. That's where you really need to be strong. You really need to be mentally strong to push, because once you do that 21, the last 8Ks or so are doable because you can see the finish line is ahead. 50, I've already done an ultra. 60K, you'll be fine. After 60K, that's where your race really starts. And that's where you need this. That's where you need the strength for. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. Dudu, you're calling from Pretoria. Hi.
Hi, Clement. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I just called to motivate you. You are going to be fine. Like the spirit, but you must know in trailer. There's a joke, says that. But you're on the right track. Keep it on. I'm not sure if you have to stop all the things. I was eating whatever that I wanted to eat so that I can console myself.
What do you eat after a tough one?
I was eating KFC.
Yeah. And pub.
And pub. That was the only thing that motivates me to run.
Yeah, no.
I was studying, I had to cook, I had to work, so it was a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, I love malva pudding with custard and ice cream. So I always find a reason to have that for dessert. And when I've had a tough day at the gym, yeah, that's an excuse for me. I'm like, let's go and do that. Thank you for calling, Dudu, and thank you for the motivation there.
Hi, Clement. We are already burdened as a country with illegal foreigners. So I think that no, illegal foreigners should not benefit from the Road Accident Fund. And as for the AKA matter, I think that Mr. Xaba acted as a middleman between the men in the dock and the actual person that wanted, aka dead. So yeah, we'll just have to wait and see how this matter unfolds. Diketso in Delta Freedom Park.
Yeah, and the question is, who is that mastermind? Who is the person who called? I mean, if the NPA are able to prove their case against this family, the Gaba brothers, or Sydney Gaba, who apparently sent money to this person, 800,000 rand, to this person who's the fourth accused in the Mather case, who then distributed it to the other guys. Who is the person who made the call to this family? Or is it this family, if the NPA proves the case, is it the family, the Gaba brothers or the Gaba family that wanted AKA dead? And what would be the motive if the NPA is able to prove that case? Kathy, you're calling us from Pretoria. Hi.
Hi, Clement, my son. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
How is the book reading? I hear you are fascinated by actual things that are happening currently.
The book reading?
Yes, I sent a book to you.
Oh, yes. I'm still yet to get to it. I'm still reading The Covenant of Water. I'm reading two books now. I just want to finish them. I'm reading The Covenant of Water, and I'm reading a book as well by, it's called Good Jew, Bad Jew. It's by, who's that professor we speak to, Abel, all the time?
No, that book, I sent it to the station manager to give it to you. It's a private book.
I know. I've got it. I know. I've got it. I'll get to it.
In time, yeah. Let's get to the point. I'm calling regarding the Gaba brothers. Remember, AK used to be engaged with a beautiful girl.
Anele. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And these Gaba brothers, I used to see them. I know it's one of their girls. So we must dwell on that. Let's not dilly-dally. And the NPA must go through that and check it. This might be a payback of that. And I'm so sorry for AK families. I love them. I love their son.
Are you suggesting Anele Tembe's family is involved here?
It should be a payback because the family was hurtful. It was it was hurtful. It was serious.
Okay, Kathy. I know the dad has already come out to did he not release a statement? I think he's already come out to say the rumors are untrue and they're pained by this. They've supported AKA even after Anele Tembe passed away. But yeah, even on social media, there are people that are now linking the Gaba family with the Tembe family. But hey, let's wait and see. I think the NPA have done an incredible job in following the money so far, and hopefully they'll be able to lead us to the mastermind. That professor that I had forgotten is Stephen Friedman. The book I'm reading, it's titled Good Jew, Bad Jew. It's an interesting book about racism, about anti-Semitism, and the assault of meaning. It's so fascinating. I'm going to finish this. I'm also reading The Covenant of Water, and I've got many other books to get to. So I'll get to your book too. Don't worry, I've got it. More WhatsApp voice notes.
Good morning, Clement. Good morning, and your team. Clement, I think before I can answer your question, maybe you need to clarify the word illegal for me. Illegal. Illegal. How do you... they're illegally here. How do they qualify for a road accident fund where they don't qualify to be here?
Yeah, look. I'm saying already... RAF is constrained. Already, the Road Accident Fund is constrained. How are we? I mean, go to any country. When you apply for a visa, whatever country you're going into, they always ask, do you have travel insurance? In fact, listen to this. I spoke to Colin Slitswalo, who is the CEO of the Road Accident Fund. He was on my show a couple of months ago. And I couldn't believe what he had shared with us, that the biggest beneficiary of the Road Accident Fund, it's not a South African, it's a foreign national. This is what he told me when he came on the show a couple of months ago. Another thing that is contained in the bill is that there are people who are not citizens or permanent residents will not be covered. Is it just people who are not permanent residents or people that are not here legally? Just help clarify that for us.
Well, our argument is that in the bill, the foreigners would not be covered.
Whether you are here legally or not?
Yes. You know what, Clement? I say this. You must go to Mozambique today. When you arrive there, they want an insurance. Mozambique. If you were going to London or anywhere else, before they give you a visa, they ask you, do you have medical insurance? Do you have insurance? They want to make sure that when you get injured in that country, the resources of that country are not spent on you. And that's a developed country. In South Africa, we say, come, we'll pay you. The biggest ever paid out claim was in 2010 to a Swiss national, 519 million. Yes, the biggest beneficiary of the road accident fund in South Africa, as we know it, is a Swiss national. He was paid 519 million rands. In today's amount, I calculate, is 838.7 million, a Swiss national. Now, at that time, how much he paid was less than 72 cents, or what he was covered for, 72 cents a liter. Now, we are now sitting with three Belgian nationals who were, I think they were at WITS, they were medical students. They are now working, they are doctors. They are claiming each 153 million claim each from the road accident fund. Now, we have people here in this country that are poor. And this system is in such a way that the more rich you are, when you get injured, the more money you get. The more poor you are, the less money you get. You know, Clement, if my child gets injured today, my helper's child gets injured today, they're in the same car, same injuries and everything, my child will get more. Simply because the father is a CEO, and the calculation of the loss of earning will be based on the trajectory of the father to say, because your father was a CEO, your chances of getting more money will be this, and therefore your loss of earnings calculated will be this much.
But why does Raf calculate it that way?
It is the way it is. It's called, it is based on the law of delict, meaning your chances of being a graduate, if your parent was not a graduate, are very low. A chance of being a CEO when it's the way it's calculated. That's a fact.
Is that fair?
It is not. That's what we are changing. We are saying now everybody must get the same. That's why they are saying no, man, they are taking away. We are taking away from the rich. We are saying if you get injured, it must not matter whether you are a CEO or you are a helper. The injury must be the same because the amount of money you are paying is the same. The cover must be the same.
I mean, does that make sense to you? No ways. It's 9:30.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyathela
on 7:02.
24 minutes before 10 o'clock. This is the 7:02 open line. Your calls on 011-883-0702. WhatsApps on 072-702-1702. Undebeni on Twitter says, Clement, training for comrades is tougher than comrades race day. Just follow the plan with a good diet. Watch out for injuries. Enjoy it. I'm preparing for the 14th one. My reward is black coffee and scones. All right, Dobeni. And then Nikelo says, Clement, I just did 12 kilometers at 4 minutes 40 seconds per kilometer after doing a longer, slower run yesterday. That's comrades for you, unfortunately. April is going to be more intense. We only stop in May. Oh, yeah. Look, I'm just glad that I'm loading up miles that are going to help me in the London Marathon, which is coming up in like 2 or 3 weeks' time. But yeah, I just think training is getting more and more intense. And it's not just running. So when I say to you I did 8Ks in like 5 minutes per kilometer for 8 kilometers. This is after I had done a watt bike at the gym for about 45 minutes. So my legs are strained. And the day before, I also did leg day with the coach at the gym. So I don't have capacity on my legs to even run. But the coach says you must push. So yeah, I can feel it. It's getting more and more intense. The road accident funds, should illegal foreign nationals be entitled to claim from the fund?
Good morning, 702 Land. I should think REF should keep its mandate as initially it was, because if they do not, they will be opening up a can of worms, in a sense that a lot of them will be coming in South Africa illegally to try and benefit out of the REF scheme, of which also you can see a lot of women, you know, who are illegally in the country and pregnant as well, you see, and benefiting out of the healthcare system of this particular country, of which this is very much unfair to the South Africans who are paying the levy and the taxes. I don't think why and how they should benefit out of the RAF scheme. So in that regard, they must not benefit nothing. Thank you.
I mean, look, I get about RAF, but I mean, when it comes to hospitals, I mean, I understand the concern that sometimes we've got illegal foreign nationals that somehow put a strain on our health system. I mean, there's been reports that have been done of people who crossed the border out of Zimbabwe to come to give birth in South Africa. But I think we've got bigger problems with our healthcare system. And I don't think that's particularly the only thing that makes it a crisis. But with the RAF scheme, that's a social scheme. It's already under-resourced. To still want to say illegal foreign nationals must just claim, they don't even have to prove whether they were here legally or not, I think that's going off the wrong way. And when you look at that, and you also look at it in conjunction with the Immigration Act, for instance, I mean, you look at Section 42 of the Immigration Act, it prohibits anyone from aiding and abetting or assisting or enabling in any manner, helping an illegal foreigner by letting or selling or in any manner making available immovable property to him or her. So if RAF pays monies to illegal immigrants who claim from this fund, isn't that contravening the act? Dennis says on the WhatsApp line, Clement, regardless of the status, if the premiums are extracted from the public at the fuel pump, then you must be covered. And Dennis raises a point there. Right? Anybody, like foreigners, foreign nationals, they also pay petrol. They also buy bread. That, the money that's extracted from some of these products goes to the road accident fund. So they are paying for that, which is fine. But if you are here illegally, it doesn't matter that you're paying for petrol or you're buying bread and that money contributes to the road accident fund. You are here illegally. And we can't use that as justification that, yeah, they're here illegally, but at least they're buying bread. At least they're contributing to the road accident fund. I don't know if that's the way to look at it. What do you think? Keep your thoughts coming. It's 19 minutes before 10.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
So I've been asking you, who are the Gqaba brothers? Sydney Mfunda Gqaba is the man that the state claims paid the suspects in the murder of AKA. And he comes from a notorious family with a taxi business empire known for apparently intimidating its rivals and allegedly buying weapons from the police. That's what the Soweto newspaper was reporting about this morning. I don't know the family, and I've been asking you if you know the Gqaba brothers. Nkosinathi Duma is a News 24 crimes and court reporter who's joining us on the line. Nkosinathi, how are you doing?
Hi, Clement. How are you?
I'm okay. You've been reporting a lot for News 24 about the taxi violence that happens in KwaZulu-Natal. What do you know about the Gqaba brothers?
Well, we know that they've got a long history of being one of the key players in the taxi industry in KwaZulu-Natal, stretching back from the 1980s. In 1996, the brothers, of which Sydney Funda is a part of, took over the business from their father after the assassination after his assassination in 1996. And since then, they have amassed, they've increased the family's empire, along with the notorious and feared family name. Mm. They also run private security companies that operate in the taxi industry. They also control, they've got contracts, lucrative contracts, I must add, with states. Entities, including the Etegwini municipality, where they took over the city's private fleet provision services after the city decided that he would no longer be running the services. And that deal, you know, is in the hundreds of millions. I think the last figure that I stated was that it is around 400 million rand that that particular business generates for the Gqaba family, in addition to the taxi industry.
Interesting. Yeah. Kosikhona Tuma, thank you so much for that. This is someone who has reported about the taxi violence there in KwaZulu-Natal. I see we've got Sfiso Shangase as well, who is the Santaco Provincial Office Manager in KwaZulu-Natal. And Sfiso, thanks. How are you?
I'm all right, Baumengatene. How are you and the listeners at home?
I'm all right. Thank you. Thank you very much. What are you able to tell us about this family in the context of their links to the taxi industry?
Well, they've got a history of being a family which is in the transport business, and they're running a fleet of vehicles, as well as they're also having a contract with the municipality when it comes to running of buses at Etegwini. And they've been providing the service in the province of KwaZulu-Natal, and their vehicles, they do have a fleet, yes. And there's nothing much that one could say, because they are merely our constituency within Santiago, because anyone that is running many bus taxis falls within the constituency then of Santiago as a council that is in charge of many bus taxis in South Africa. But in particular here, because we are in the province of KwaZulu-Natal, yes, they're also part of our constituency.
Okay. Is it fair to say they are probably the most influential family within that taxi industry?
Well, it will depend on which particular angle are you talking about the influence. Because we have democracy within how we operate within the taxi industry, especially when it comes to our council. Anyone who has got views which are progressive, then in making sure that the industry progresses, we listen to those, and they also have inputs, and we also listen to them. And yes, indeed, on those particular bases, they are given a platform as well as any other operator who could be able then to view his or her own points in making sure that the industry goes progresses. Yes.
Okay. Sfiso Shangase, Santaco Provincial Office Manager in KwaZulu-Natal. Thanks for those insights. It's 40 minutes before 10.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyatela
on 702.
Morning, Clement. I thought you were going to reward yourself with Kentucky. Your university days.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's someone you know has been listening to you from Fanduka. Eh? I once shared a story of how when I was at the University of Pretoria, I used to share a room at a flat. We used to share one room, and it was the three of us with my friends from home. And so we used to contribute towards groceries. And there was a time when I would have had such a hectic exam at UP, and we stayed in Sunnyside, by the way. So I used to walk from Hatfield to Sunnyside, or Sunnyside to Hatfield, that's cool. So there's times when I would have written a very hectic exam, and I would go by, there was a KFC on the way to my flat, and I would stop there. And there's one time when I wanted to reward myself, because I had just finished writing exams. And the policy, by the way, with my friends was we share everything. Like if somebody has got some money, they're buying some chicken wings, come with them, we share. But that day, I only had enough to just buy like a two-piece, yeah, two pieces of KFC. So I stopped by and I had that KFC, and I was sitting at KFC. I had that with a stony. And guess what happens? One of my flatmates passes by. Yo, I wanted the earth to open and swallow me. Because what I did was what we agreed we don't do. We're supposed to share things. But I just wanted to reward myself. But yeah, anyway, till to this day, they still call me out on that. So this is what this listener is referring to. But yeah, no, my reward now, I love sweet things. So I always will just try have dessert. And I know it's not good. But after I've had it, I feel much better. And I feel like I've rewarded my body for having put it through so much strain. It's 12 minutes before.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clemens Mangatella
on 702.
10 minutes before 10 o'clock. Tabo, good morning.
Morning, Clement. How are you?
Good, man. Go ahead.
Yes. Clement, you know, this country, we are actually bleeding a lot into the foreign nationals. It's not only on the issue of the RAF. I read an article about 2 weeks ago about how much the country is spending on translators or foreign nationals whenever they are actually involved into the court issues as well. So if you're looking at it, it's like they actually come in here intentionally just to defraud the country, because there is a lot also that's going on at the hospital in terms of the claiming. So I think the issue here is dealing with what we call the best constitution in the world. And there is nothing like that, because it is because of this constitution that we've got all these stupid laws that actually gets us to be where we are now.
But what's wrong with translating for people who are foreign nationals? Are you talking about illegal foreign nationals?
Illegal,
or are you talking
illegal.
About,
they're talking about the illegal foreign nationals when they are actually like caught doing illegal stuff. They're illegal, they're caught doing illegal stuff, so they still need to get a translator.
So what must we do then, Tabo? Like get them to court and the court must continue with a process where they don't hear anything? Huh?
Why should they be here in the first place when there should be a law that says when you are illegal and you are caught, and it should be by that on its own is a court, is a decision that must be made that you shouldn't even be going to court. That's why we need to have the refugee camps. You just go in there. It's like
we have Lindela. We do have Lindela, but remember the court then is the one that's going to even lead to them being deported or being sent to Lindela repatriation center, where after there, they're going to be sent back to their countries if they are here illegally. What I'm saying is we are a country here that also, I mean, we are global citizens. The issue of immigration is a global phenomenon. This is not something that South Africa experiences. And if you are a country that espouses and appreciates, acknowledges human rights across the board, whether you are a foreigner or you are here illegally or not, you have a responsibility to, even in your court processes, when those illegal foreigners come, it's not that you're justifying their actions. You know, you are availing translators there so that when the judgment comes and says, you are going to be sent to Lindela and you're going to be sent back to your home countries, they're able to understand that. I'm not sure if I would love to live in a country that treats foreign nationals like that, where even when they go to court, they don't care whether they're going to be understanding where or what they have transgressed. Just send them there and then just deport them.
I wish we were using the same practice as other African countries are doing, because we always want to benchmark ourselves on other countries that are out of this continent.
Mm.
Check what other, and then that's how they actually dealing with illegal immigrants. And we just need to do what illegal immigrants are being done in their countries as well. Simple as that.
All right, Tibos, thank you so much for your call, man. Anonymous, you're calling us from KwaZulu-Natal. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, I understand that you know about the Gaba family.
Yeah, let me just give you a little bit insight. Construction mafia, you get a tender for 30 million, they rock up by you and they ask you for 3 million. I would love you to have guys like Pravin Gordhan and the other guy, what's his name, Kivit or somebody, on air to explain how does a businessman, let's say I'm a businessman who gets a contract to build a mall.
Mm.
How do I take out 1 million or 3 million from the bank and just give people, and how do I duck that on my books? Those guys, Gaba brothers, have been given the Durban municipality passes because of their uncle's connection, the guy who's now heading the newest political party.
Oh, the links, because the family they come from Nkandla, right? The Gqaba family.
Yes.
And the brother's mother is a sister to Jacob Zuma.
It's well documented who's their uncle. They are untouchable. They're untouchable. Their vehicles and their kumbis, their quantums, their taxis, don't get tickets. If you're a traffic officer and you ticket the Gqaba brother's taxi, when you get back to depot, you are suspended. You are not authorized to fine him for overloading, for the driver wearing no seatbelt, for having smooth tires, nothing. You are suspended. It is well-known fact in Natal. That's what happens. Currently, there was a municipal strike on. It is rumored that after this municipal strike, workers will be laid off and the whole contract will be outsourced to the Gqaba brothers as specialists of picking up Durban solid waste, as they were involved in the contract of the orange bags. I'm not sure if you're aware of the orange bin bags that were given for picking up rubbish that were subsequently made at a thinner micron.
Sure. And you are in KwaZulu-Natal, Anonymous. These are people you dealt with.
Money is being taken from big businesses, hospitals, construction businesses. They just come and they say, I want 10% at your gate. I know where you stay. I know where your family works. I know where your wife works. I know where your kids go to school. Don't even change your schedule. We know your whole schedule. Don't change it.
Have you had first-hand experience with them?
Yes, I've paid them over 2 million to save my neck.
Anonymous in KwaZulu-Natal, thanks for calling.
Hi, Clement. You're speaking to Mantombi. I'm a first-time caller or messenger or responder, whichever one it is. And I just want to say that I feel like when it comes to the conversation of the road accident fund, when it comes to people from outside the country, like foreigners and stuff, I just feel like it's not fair for them to be benefiting anything from our road accident fund, you know, because they are reckless drivers. Like, in the area that I live, they are so reckless on the road. They are reckless walking and driving. I don't know how you can be reckless walking, but they're reckless on both sides. So it's going to be hard for some of us who our parents are paying taxes and who have always been South Africans from day one, to be now giving away our accident funds to other people. You get what I'm saying? Because now they, as reckless as they are, they're going to keep benefiting time and again, over and over and over and over and over and over. Meantime, in different countries, when we go out there, you have to have your own medical aid. You have to make sure you are already insured. You insure yourself. When you come in to visit us, you must make sure you're insured. You get what I'm saying? So now we're going to be out there in the world, busy getting whatever, sick and everything, making sure we are insured, or even if we get into an accident, make sure we are insured and everything. But then they can just come to our country and get bumped and just take money, claim money from us.
Yeah, look, and to be fair, I mean, we can't say, oh, foreign nationals are reckless drivers. That's generalizing. Imagine I'm saying, oh, black people are this, or white people are this, so I think we need to be careful there. But I'm hearing your point that sometimes, you know, some of them that you see, I mean, I don't know how you're able to see that driver is an illegal foreign national. We need to be very careful of that. But I think I'm hearing what you're saying. And broadly, I agree. I think we, as a constitutional democracy, have obligations when it comes to human rights, protections, and the protection of life. Like, if there's a foreign national who is illegal, who is about to die, are we a country that just wants to look at them and say, no, we can't waste our healthcare resources? We're not a country like that. We shouldn't. But if we have a particular scheme whose intention is to respond to people who have been injured or died from accidents, why are we saying that illegal foreign nationals must also be entitled to that? Why are we saying they mustn't prove that at the time of the accident they were here legally? We're setting a very bad precedent, I think.